Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Ignacio, for the kind introduction. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. What we are going to discuss today is a little bit about what has been my research topic over the last 2 years here as a Fulbright scholar working with Professor Grossman on synthesis and optimization of biofuel production processes. As you can see on slide 2, we have the overview of the talk. We will begin with a little introduction on the energy concerns on the contribution and share of biofuels. The second part will be the method we've applied for the development of optimal processes for the production of biofuels related to energy consumption and water consumption, and finally some conclusions. If we move on to slide 3, we see that over the last 50 years there has been an exponential increase in the consumption of energy. In the beginning it was mostly coal, but in order to cope with the demand, oil, gas and also different renewables have been included. And if we move on to slide 4, we see that it is expected that in the next 20 years the contribution of the renewables will reach that of hydro, even nuclear. Of course, there's some uncertainty nowadays with nuclear due to the problems in Japan, but still it's a source of energy that can still provide a good share. As also we can see, the contribution of oil is expected to drop from the actual value till 25%. Here in the US we saw on slide 5 the distribution of the different sources of energy, and in particular the renewable ones contribute to 7%, and from that 50% corresponds to biomass. One of the most important or more challenging sector is the transportation one, in which we have to carry the fuel as we move. That requires high density energy sources, and so far and in the short term only biomass is capable of providing this kind of fuels. In the beginning it was mostly the first generation of biofuels related to the use of corn for the production of ethanol and different seeds for the production of biodiesel. However, both compete or interfere with the food market, and therefore the government support policies in order to increase the production of biofuels by using lignocellulosic base or the use of waste or even algae. And in order for these processes to be profitable, we need to optimize it. So the idea is to use mathematical programming techniques in order to evaluate or identify the proper processes for producing either ethanol or diesel, hydrogen, and so on. So on slide 8 you can see a scheme of the different options we have to produce fuels from lignocellulosic materials, from algae, or cooking oil. From lignocellulosic materials, we can either generate corn, generate ethanol following a path similar to that of corn, hydrolysis and fermentation, but we can also generate syngas, and from that we can produce ethanol, hydrogen, methanol, FT fuels, or some others like methanol. From algae we can produce first oil, and with that oil we can generate biodiesel. And from the waste, the idea of using cooking oil is that it's a residue, it's really difficult to treat, and if we produce biodiesel from that, we are not only taking care of a dangerous byproduct of the food industry, but also we can generate some energy. So on slide 9 we see that the biggest problems or the biggest concerns in the production of biofuels are energy and water. But that wasn't the case until very recently. In slide 10 we present that for many years it was only energy what mattered. The thing is that for quite some time corn ethanol was considered to be to have a negative net energy balance. However, energy optimization is easy.
because it's expensive. So anytime we optimize a profit, or we can either optimize the energy consumption, with that we will get not only an optimized process, but we will reduce the cost. However, the optimization of water is very is different, as we can see on slide 11. Until very recently, water has not been a problem, not only because of its availability, but also because of its cost. However, the increase in population and industrialization leads to a problem that you can see on the slide. It is considered that by 2025, two-thirds of the world population will suffer water stress. So this is a second problem we will have to face in order to produce the biofuels, not only profitable, but also in a sustainable way. We are not going to deal with the problem of irrigation, because that is also related to where we are going to locate the plants. We will focus on the water consumption in the production process. As we can see on slide 12, there is huge or quite big in ranges of water consumption, either for corn ethanol, from ethanol produced from lignocellulosic raw materials, and biodiesel. And as I mentioned, the low price of water makes the optimization quite difficult. So what we propose, and is presented on slide 13, is a two-stage method. First, we are going to optimize the process based on energy, or a simplified production cost, in order to evaluate and identify which are the alternatives, the technologies that allow us to produce the biofuel in a cheap way or in a profitable way. And in a second stage, we will use the mathematical programming techniques to develop the water network that minimizes water consumption. However, these two stages are not independent. As we will see later, as we reduce the cooling needs in a process, we will also reduce the losses of water in the cooling tower, and that will reduce the fresh water consumption in the process. So we are going to illustrate this method with the first generation of biofuels, the ethanol, and later we will present the results for second generation and biodiesel. And on slide 14, you see the superstructure for the production of corn for the production of ethanol from corn. Basically consists of three different parts. The first one on the top of the slide is the we are going to break the physical and chemical structure of the corn in order to generate or to obtain the sugars. Later we are going to ferment those sugars, and we can either separate solids before or after the beer column. This is the first decision we have to make. And the second is how we are going to dehydrate the ethanol, either rectification, adsorption in corn grids, or molecular sieves. These three technologies can work either in parallel or sequentially, depending on the needs to dehydrate the ethanol. So the solution of the superstructure is the one you can see on the slide, slide 15. We're going to separate the solids before the beer column, and what the dehydration structure is doing is trying to use as less as possible the rectification column, basically because the distillation columns are the most energy intense equipment of this process. So because of this, we are going to substitute these columns by what is called multi-effect columns, so that we split the column. You can see that on slide 16, the low pressure column and high pressure column, so that the condenser of the high pressure column will act as a reboiler of the low pressure column. In this sense, we are not only reducing the heat load in the reboiler, but also the cooling needs at the top of the low pressure column. Here on slide 17, you can see how, as we implement these technologies — this is just for the sake of the explanation of the results — as we implement this technique, we can see how we reduce not only the energy, but also the cooling needs. If we only optimize the superstructure, we have case A. If we develop the heat exchanger network based on SynHeat, the software prepared here by Professor Grossman's group, we reduce both. As we implement the multi-effect columns and we also develop the heat exchanger network, we can go even to reduce the energy consumption by half, and the cooling needs by 2/3. For these cases, what we are going to do on slide 18 is to use the model developed by Professor Ahmetovic and Professor Grossman for designing the water network. It basically consists of a bunch of process units, demand units, sources and treatment units in order to recycle, treat the water and reuse it. So what we are going to do is to identify in our processes which are the process units, the sources and so on. On slide 19, you see for our case study that identification. The process units are the washing of the raw material, the boiler and the cooling tower. The demand units are the fermenter, because we need to provide water. Boiler and cooling tower too, and we have sources, which are the bottoms of both distillation columns. However, these two have a number of organics, so we have to identify which are the best treatments for this, so that we can actually reuse that water. So we propose three different technologies for treating the water. Organics removal basically is what any wastewater treatment plant is using. Salt removal based on reverse osmosis to treat the water coming from the boiler and the cooling tower, and the solids removal for the treatment of the raw material. With that, we apply the model for the four cases we presented before, and on slide 20 you see the results of the freshwater consumption for all of them. As you can see, as we reduce the cooling, we are also reducing the fresh water from levels around the industrial average, 3.4, till the industrial goal that some companies like Delta T Company have claimed that it can be reached, and of course we prove that that level can be reached. So we're going to use this approach in order to optimize the production process of second generation. So from switchgrass we are going to obtain a number of biofuels, starting from ethanol, later hydrogen and FT. On slide 21 we are going to start with the use of switchgrass as raw material for the production of biofuels. On slide 22 we see that we can produce ethanol from switchgrass in a similar way to that of using corn. We are going to break the physical structure of the switchgrass. In this case we are proposing two different technologies, ammonia fiber explosion or dilute acid. Once we get the polymers, we are going to break the polymers into the monomers, which are the sugars. We are going to ferment the sugars. We have lignin that we will separate so that we can use it as a fuel for providing energy within the process, and we have to dehydrate that mixture. In this case we are also adding a fourth alternative in order to remove water. So we are going to propose rectification, adsorption, molecular sieves and per-evaporation. If we optimize the flow sheet based on minimum energy consumption, we see here only to mention on slide 23 is only thermal energy in order to compare with the previous results from corn ethanol. As we see, since the pretreatment for this for switchgrass are more aggressive than those needed for corn, we are going to use more cooling water because we need to work at higher temperature. And the biggest difference is that both processes, if we use lignin, are produce energy instead of require energy for the production of ethanol. Another stage is how these pretreatments behave. The idea is, depending on the amount of lignin within the raw material, we have to select the pretreatment. For the case of switchgrass, because of the amount of lignin, around 10 to 15%, the acid pretreatment requires less raw material than AFEX, and since the raw material here is expensive and is becoming more expensive as a result of the economic evaluation, also the optimal flowsheet for the production of ethanol on slide 25 from switchgrass via hydrolysis is the one which uses dilute acid, hydrolysis, fermentation and molecular sieves for the dehydration of the liquid mixture. Here on the slide we also see that the production cost is around $0.8 per gallon and the investment is around $161 million. There is another possibility to obtain ethanol, which is the gasification of the raw material. For this, we are going to propose a larger number of alternatives on slide 26. You can see that we will first gasify. We propose two alternatives, direct gasification and direct gasification. Reforming of those gas, steam reforming that will generate more hydrogen, but is endothermic, so it requires energy. Partial oxidation will produce less hydrogen, but is exothermic. Later we have to remove the solids and other compounds. We will adjust the composition because we need a ratio CO to hydrogen 1:1. So in case of we have an excess of hydrogen, we can use it for as byproduct, or we may need to generate more hydrogen. Next, we are going to use propose three technologies for the removal of short gases, either MEA, absorption in monoethanolamines, PSA for the removal of CO2, or membranes. And once we have the syngas prepared, we have two alternatives: either fermentation of the syngas, in which case we will get a ethanol water mixture, which will have to be dehydrated. We are going to use the same technologies as we presented in the previous case, and we can also follow a catalytic path which is similar to that of Fischer-Tropsch, is what is called mixed alcohol synthesis, in which case we get ethanol, methanol, propanol, and some others, and we propose two different distillation sequences for this. In order to solve this superstructure, we are going to follow a partial enumeration technique for the binary variables. We are going to separate either direct from indirect gasification on slide 27, partial oxidation steam reforming, and the two synthetic paths. And for each one of the subproblems, we are going to optimize the flowsheet based on energy consumption for the adjustment of the composition of the syngas, the short gases removal, and the purification of ethanol, either dehydration or if we have to purify it from the mix of alcohols. Performing that optimization and heat integration on slide 28, we get that the optimal flowsheet for the production of ethanol following this gasification path is that which uses direct gasification followed by steam reforming. And in this case, we get an excess of hydrogen that can be sold, and that will produce major savings and a profit for our process. With that, we see that the production cost is almost half the previous one, but at the same time, since we need more equipment, the investment for the plant is almost twice the previous value. This is a very interesting trade-off we have to evaluate later. And this is an example of the water network for this particular case, in which we have the fresh water. The sources of water in this case are any condensation we have in the process. We will treat that water, and we can reuse it either for washing the raw material and for providing water for the cooling tower and the gasifier. Just as a summary of the production of ethanol, on slide 30, you can see that of all the processes, the one which uses less cooling is that of corn, basically because it's milder, while the energy consumption in most of the processes is negative. That's to say, we can generate energy at the same time of producing ethanol. And another summary for the production of ethanol is the water consumption. The value on slide 31, we can see the figure. There is uncertain in the value of the consumption of water for the production of gasoline. There's a range of values. We selected 2.5 from the literature. And as you can see, we can produce ethanol consuming less water than the one needed for gasoline using these techniques. But we on slide 32, we see that we can produce not only ethanol from switchgrass, but also hydrogen. The idea is, in this case, the gasification will work on a mode in which we optimize the production of hydrogen. So in this case, we will have to evaluate the conditions for the optimal production of hydrogen in this case, and we will follow the reforming of the gas to remove the hydrocarbons, and finally, apart from removing solids and so on, we will use a water gas sieve in order to transform that gas into hydrogen. The only particular thing is that this water gas sieve is a very on slide 33. This is a quite common chemical reaction. However, it depends on a couple of variables. So what we did is to develop a simple reduced order model in order to be able to determine the conversion as function of the temperature in the reactor and the ratio between steam and CO that is operating. Of course, this is an equilibrium, and what we are trying to do is to move the equilibrium towards the production of hydrogen. For that, in this process generates energy. On slide 34, we can see the four big options: direct gasification, indirect gasification, steam reforming, and partial oxidation. And after heat integration and economic evaluation, on slide 35, we can see the optimal flowsheet for the production of hydrogen, which involves the use of indirect gasification followed by steam reforming. There is, in this case, the production cost is $0.68 per kilo. It's commonly when we produce hydrogen, instead of talking about gallons, it's considered that 1 kilo of hydrogen has more or less the same energy as 1 gallon of gasoline. And as you see, of course, the flow sheet is easier than the previous one, and as a result, the investment cost is the lowest of the ones we've seen. There is another important thing we have to consider. Biomass is a source of carbon. So we should not use biomass to produce only hydrogen. And the idea is what we can do with CO2. One of the options is using it for the production of oil from algae. We can also produce, as you can see on slide 36, we can also produce FT diesel. Basically, the first stages are the same. We are going to produce a syngas, and later we will have to adjust the composition in order to optimize the production of Fischer Tops diesel. For that, the catalytic reactor is modeled based on the Anderson-Swartz correlation. And it depends on this parameter alpha you can see on slide 37, which is a function of the temperature in the reactor and also of the ratio between CO and hydrogen. And there is another reactor that is involved in this process, which is the hydrocracking. We are using also experimental results from the literature in order to come up with a simple model for this reactor. As you see on the previous slide 36, the hydrocracking, what it's going to do is to break the woks generated in the Fischer tops to generate more gasoline and more diesel. So if we, in this case, we are not only optimizing the superstructure, but also the operating conditions of the reactors in order to optimize the production of FT diesel. As in the case of hydrogen, there is no consumption of energy. All the processes generate energy. And the difference is the steam base, the processes that which involve steam reforming will absorb part of that energy because it's an endothermic reaction, while those which involve partial oxidation will generate a little more energy. After heat integration and an economic evaluation, on slide 39, we present the flow sheet for the production of FT diesel. This one requires indirect gasification followed by steam reforming, and the operating characteristics of the reactor are the ones which generate the gas, the syngas fed to the catalytic reactor is the one obtained after reforming. We don't need to adjust the composition because it's already the proper one for the production of diesel. In this case, As we can also see on the slide, the production cost is $0.72 per gallon, and the investment is $212 million. It's something in between both production processes for ethanol, as we can remember. We've used switchgrass for the production of different fuels. Basically, or most of them are related to ethanol, but we see that we can also produce some others like green gasoline or FT diesel or hydrogen. And the other part of this talk is related to the production of biodiesel from oil. On slide 41, you can see that we have two different sources of that oil. First, cooking oil. In this case, the amount of cooking oil available will depend on the country, will depend on the food industry, but at the same time, it will be a good treatment for that waste. And we can also produce the oil from algae. And once we have the oil, we propose five different alternatives, five different transesterification technologies, either alkali, acid, supercritical, heterogeneous, or enzymatic transesterification of the oil to generate biodiesel. On slide 42, we present the flowsheet for the production of oil from algae. It starts at a pond. Basically, the ponds are used for the for the production of large quantities of oil. Later, we propose two different alternatives: the traditional recovery of algae, which involves separation, different filters, and drying of the algae. But recently, a company called Univentur have developed a method based on capillarity and membranes, which in a single step is capable of separating the algae with a moisture which is already the proper one for going to extraction of the oil from the algae. The extraction takes place with hexane, and we separate the hexane from the oil in a distillation column. The optimal flow sheet is simple. On slide 43, we can see that it's using this new technology. The only problem of this technology is that we may have some problems in the scale-up, since this company is still working on that scale-up process from the lab scale to pilot plant and to industrial size. With this, we can reach the goal of $0.17 per kilo, which is something that in the literature is already present. These values are expected, and we can reach those values by using this technology, as long as the technology allows us to separate the algae from all the water. Because basically the problem here is that the concentration of algae in the pond is really really small, and we have to remove a large amount of water. So if we can do it properly in an efficient way, we can save a lot of energy and money in this operation. And of course, the investment cost of this particular of this part of the plant is based on how much will cost us to build all the ponds in the field. For the second part, once we have the oil, on slide 44 we see just an example of the flow sheet for the production of biodiesel. Basically, it consists of a reactor in which the transesterification will take place, and later we have to separate the excess of methanol from the oil. The idea here is that it's also an equilibrium, so we need to work with an excess of methanol. So we will find that the optimal conditions will not only depend on the optimal production of biodiesel after the reactor, which is something that people has prepared so far, but also taking into account that we have to separate that methanol from the mixture. So this will allow us to prepare the simultaneous optimization and heat integration of the structure, so that we determine not only the operating condition at the reactor, but also the ones which allow us the proper separation of methanol from the oil. For this, we've been using models from the literature for the reactor, for the different technologies. And one thing that is worth mentioning is the fact that most of the those results are also at laboratory scale, basically because our papers coming from different labs which have been producing biodiesel, of course, at that scale. So this is the uncertainty in these results. So here on slide 45, you see just one example using surface response models. The people come up with this kind of models in which we can determine the yield towards the production of biodiesel depending on the temperature, the ratio of methanol in the reactor, as well as the amount of catalyst, and of course in the case of supercritical also the pressure, in the case of different catalysts the amount, or the different proportions in the case of the enzymatic. For this we have two different solutions. On slide 46 we see that in the case of the algae oil, this oil is more pure and in this case we will be using the alkali based catalyst with a production cost of $0.47 per gallon, and the investment is basically that due to the production of oil. In the second case, using cooking oil, the problem is that the cooking oil not only contains the oil itself but also some impurities like water or free fatty acid, and in that case we will be using another technology, which is the heterogeneous catalyst, which is more insensitive to these impurities. And of course, as you can see, the price of cooking oil is a little higher than that of the oil generated by algae, as long as we can use this new technology to produce the oil. But on the other hand, the investment is quite smaller, basically because the only thing we have is two or three distillation columns and a couple of reactors. So with that, on slide 47 we see a summary of the results. There are a number of trade-offs related to the investment and the production cost. For example, the lowest production cost is that of ethanol from gasification, while the investment is the highest. We have the lowest investment cost is that of biodiesel, with a relatively high production cost. And apart from this cost, there is something which is very important for the integration of processes, which is the bioproducts. Not only the energy generated, but also that most of the processes generate CO2. We have to either capture it or we can use it in the production of oil from algae. Some others will produce hydrogen as a byproduct that will help not only in the future economy of hydrogen, but also as a profit for our plants. In the case of FT diesel, we have green gasoline, so we are producing not only FT diesel, but another fuel that is can be sold. And in the case of biodiesel, we are producing glycerol, which can be used for the production of different plastics and so on. And also, depending on the production process, we can also produce some fertilizers, which not only allow us to reduce the production cost, but also are interesting for the production of algae themselves. In terms of water consumption, we see that the production of biodiesel requires just less than 1 gallon per gallon, and only ethanol is still around 1.5 to 2 gallons per gallon, which are the levels that are expected or are the goals for the industry. So with that, just we go through the conclusions. On slide 48, we see that we've seen that biomass and waste are promising raw materials, as long as we can use the proper technologies to generate the biofuels. We can produce a wide range of biofuels, not only ethanol and biodiesel as they are the most typical ones, but also hydrogen, green gasoline, FT diesel. The thing that the use of mathematical programming techniques allow us to evaluate a large number of options, as well as will help us to determine which are the operating conditions at the reactors. And finally, it's feasible to produce this second generation, but there is still need for further research in some technologies so that they are actually capable of producing or capable of reaching the values that they've been they are in the literature at lab scale. This is a problem we cannot handle easily, because we need also the help of many. I mean, not only money for the research, but also the people doing this kind of extra work. So with that, of course, any time we prepare this kind of list is short. So thank you. There's a couple of guys who will be doctors in a couple of days too. So Sebastian and Juan, and thank you very much to all of you for attending the talk. And this is my home again, the University of Salamanca. Is almost 800 years old, and there is a myth which says that all the students who wanted to pass their exams need to find a frog on the facade of the university. So you can see hundreds of tourists just looking for that frog. Just a hint, the frog is on one of the schools, so you have to go there and look for that. So thank you very much for your attention, and if you have any questions, please, I will be happy to take them.